Carlson and Smith versus Gorecki. Mr. Bersani?
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Mike Bersani. I represent the State's Attorney Gorecki, who is the defendant appellant in this case. Your Honors, the issue in this case is whether State's Attorney Gorecki is entitled to qualified immunity for refusing to appoint the plaintiffs as her special investigators based on political reasons. It is our position that the district court erred in denying summary judgment in this case and rejecting State's Attorney Gorecki's qualified immunity defense. Your Honor, the analysis here is a functional analysis. Are the duties inherent in the office of State's Attorney Special Investigator? Does politics play a role in that?
Could I just sure. ask you sort of a bottom line question? Can Ms. Gorecki admit that she fired Mr. Carlson and Mr. Smith solely to retaliate against them, but still claim qualified immunity on the ground that political loyalty is an appropriate requirement for the special investigator position?
Can they retaliate in what way, Your Honor? Meaning that retaliate for their political activity, their support of her opponent?
Yes,
I believe so. I think this, if I'm understanding your question correctly, this court not only makes political affiliation part of that analysis, but also political speech and political activity in the Warzon case and the Wilbur versus Mahon case. So yes, she can. If they engaged in political activity that was critical of her during the campaign, if they were affiliated with her opponents, if they were affiliated with her predecessor, when she walked into office, if they can be classified as policymakers or confidential employees, or there was some other characteristic of their employment that made political that made politics an appropriate requirement of the job, then yes, she can fire them, and she can still claim qualified immunity.
But that's a big if, isn't it? If they are policymakers, or if they are confidential employees, or if she is it just enough for her to think that they would be, had she decided to keep that position?
No, I think that obviously the record would have to support that. And if you look at the functional, if you look at the functions of the job, I mean, we start with the statute. The State's Attorney's Act says that the State's Attorney can appoint her own special investigators to do a number of things, including to conduct investigations which assist her in the performance of her duties. It's our position that this position would be no different than State's Attorney Gorecki appointing assistant state's attorneys. It's the same analysis. These are her personal appointments. Under the Heck versus City of Freeport case, when you have an appointed position by an elected official, that appointed position serves the same term as the elected official. And this court held in Heck that under those circumstances, political considerations are not only appropriate but also permissible criteria for that job. And so that person can walk into office, look at her personal appointments, and say, you know what, I don't want that person because I don't trust that person because that person was affiliated with my predecessor. Or in this case here, is my political enemy.
Now, these jobs didn't simply expire at the time of the new state attorney taking office, did they?
That's correct.
So they had to be terminated, so to speak.
Yes, they would have to be. I suppose you could have a holdover situation where an employee stays in that position if the newly elected official does not act right away. But ultimately, they would have to be reappointed by the newly elected official.
They would.
Yeah.
I mean, they could not. That just isn't a job where you just keep going to work every day unless the state's attorney, in effect, reappoints. I understand she didn't appoint anybody.
No, in fact, what she did here was she eliminated the position. That's what she did. Now, the plaintiff's claim is that she did so based on politics, so we have to deal with that issue head on. And so our position is that, assuming that she did so for political reasons, she could lawfully do so under the law. Because number one, these positions as special investigators were appointed by her personally. These positions, if these individuals investigated matters within the performance of her duties, basically stepping in her shoes and investigating matters, that they provided input to prosecutors on those matters and meaningful input. Prosecutorial decisions are made on them.
What in the record is going to tell us that the special investigator position was the sort that requires political allegiance for its effective performance? Because it seems that both Mr. Carlson and Mr. Smith have presented evidence that their input into, you know, sort of governmental decision-making is absolutely limited to providing some sort of factual report so that state's attorneys could make policy decisions.
No. Judge, I would disagree with the way they interpret the record, because what the record shows us is what the plaintiffs want to do here is they want to point to the tasks that were actually performed under the prior administration, and that doesn't really inform the analysis, to the exclusion of other tasks that these individuals could perform and that the state attorney could ask them to perform.
But could and did. Don't we have to look at the at what they did, not what they could do?
You can look at what they did to see of the, to inform the analysis of the type of things that they could do.
Uh-huh.
But merely because a prior state attorney says, you know what, I'm going to have my special investigators, you know, clean the washrooms. That's all I'm going to have them do. Well, that doesn't preclude a subsequent state attorney from saying, you know what, I want my special investigators to be involved in investigations. I want them to gather facts for me, which I can depend upon to make my prosecutorial decisions. It doesn't change the law. The same analysis really goes, a good example would be the testimony of John Barsanti, who was the first assistant under the prior state's attorney. Barsanti ran against the prior state's attorney for state's attorney and lost. He was kept on after that. Now, does that mean that from that point forward, the position of assistant state's attorney is no longer a policymaker or a confidential employee and cannot be fired for political reasons? No, it doesn't. That doesn't change the law. I mean, the case of Livitz versus Petka is still, it's still good law on assistant state's attorneys, and it certainly doesn't bind subsequent state's attorneys merely because the prior state's attorney treated the position a little differently.
Now, do you view these positions as upper level? Upper-level employees?
Yes.
These are upper-level employees?
Yes, absolutely.
They're on a par with the state's attorney?
Exactly. Right.
They are?
Yes, because they're no different than the assistant state's attorney who is appointed by the elected official. You know, there's no other position by statute that is appointed by the state's attorney, personally. You have assistant state's attorneys who are appointed. You have special investigators who are appointed. They're within the inner sanctum. The state attorney can rely upon that person with respect to policy advice and also confidentiality. Obviously, the positions are confidential in nature. The last argument I want to make here, Judge, because this is a two-part analysis, is the state of the law. Under Hernandez versus O'Malley, this court has already said that investigator-type positions in state attorney's offices, the law is not clear. It is uncertain. And that's something
that
the district court did not address.
Yeah. Mr. Sainz, does that analysis then require, under that case law, that we go beyond the statutory description and have to look at how it's employed in county by county?
No, I think that you start with the statutory description, and I think that you can consider how state's attorneys have dealt with that position that help you determine on a functional basis whether those employees would be policymakers. But I don't think that the inherent duties of the position would change from county to, would change the analysis from county to county.
But of course, Judge Norgel didn't get to that inquiry because he denied summary judgment once he determined that a reasonable jury could infer that the investigator position is not inherently a policymaking or confidential.
He didn't get to it, and respectfully, he should have, because even if you conclude that there was a First Amendment violation or there was a fact question as to whether these were policymakers or confidential employees, you have to go to the next step of the analysis, which is whether the law was clearly established. Was the law at that time, would it have put State Attorney Gorecki on reasonable notice that firing this type of employee violated the First Amendment? And the law was not clearly established.
How old is this position?
I'm sorry, Judge?
How old is this position? I mean, it was created by what statute? And we do not the age of this. I mean, you say not on notice. I'm just trying to, whether this position has been in existence for a while.
I believe that the position of investigator has been in position for quite some time. It was recently changed about 10 years ago, and the description made these individuals peace officers. They could carry guns. They have to be certified police officers, which is what they are, which really makes them no different than the deputy sheriffs in Upland.
May I?
I see my time.
I have another question.
Sure.
I'm sorry
to do this.
But my other question was whether we would have jurisdiction to determine whether there is a disputed issue of fact concerning her Ms. Gorecki's motivation for firing Mr. Smith and Mr. Carlson. I'm thinking of that Johnson versus Jones case, the United States Supreme Court case that said there's no interlocutory appeal in qualified immunity case in the question of whether there is a genuine issue of material fact for trial.
Mm-hmm. Well, first,
Am I coming off at left field?
No, I think I understand what you're saying. I would say that there's not a question of fact. And secondly, you still have to address the issue of whether the law was clearly established. So if the law was not clearly established that these type of positions were policymakers or confidential employees under the Hernandez case, under the Hudson case, under the Matlock case, I mean, the law was a little all over the place. And so a reasonable state's attorney would not have been put on fair notice, which I think is the standard under U.S. Supreme Court precedent, as to whether or not what she was doing here violated the First Amendment rights of these individuals.
Do we have the record reflect how the history of this in this county, the employment of the first people to hold that position?
No.
We have no...
No, the record, no. Investigators have been employed for probably 15, record shows, probably 15, 20 years.
And appointed by
the state's attorney.
By state's
attorney.
Yes.
That's all?
Well, it may have been longer, Your Honor. I know that we went as far back as the former state's attorney and prior to that.
I suppose before that time there were probably a lot of deputies detailed by the county sheriff, perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's actually what the record would support, that the state's attorney would utilize outside police agencies who were maybe assigned by the sheriff's department to help out the state's attorney until such time as the state's attorney decided to fund their own position. And then statutorily, the position came into existence as a peace officer status approximately 10 years ago.
Well, will the record tell us how many assistant state's attorneys there?
I think it does, Your Honor. I don't have that site with me right here, but I want to say that they probably have about 30 assistant state's attorneys in that office.
And how many special investigators?
They had two special investigators assigned to the criminal division.
But there was a third paid by some other group. So would he be considered a third or not?
No, that position I don't think was a special investigator because I don't believe that person was a certified peace officer.
Okay.
But that was a separate division, and it was a funded by grant money. If the grant money runs out, the position's not there.
Thank you.
Right.
Mr. Kapua.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Your Honor, counsel.
I'd like to first address Judge Rogner's inquiry. There is a real jury question with regard to Ms. Gorecki's motive, and this is the question. Did she fire Smith and Carlson because there was some important or vital government interest at stake, namely that they had to be political allies to do the job of special investigator, or did she fire them out of pure political retribution as punishment for their activities? And the Supreme Court has dealt with this issue and has said, I don't care if it's a confidential employee, a policy-making employee. The firing must serve a vital government interest. and not just be for the convenience of the elected official, or, more insidiously, to punish the person who speaks out. The procedural history of this case was that it was originally a 12B6 motion that was converted to a summary judgment. The defendant moved for a stay of discovery. The plaintiffs moved to take exactly 2 depositions. And just with those 2 depositions, we have put into the record and furnished this court with over 20 years of historical treatment of the Office of Special Investigator.
Here's the thing that I need help with. Even if they've demonstrated that Ms. Gorecki has violated their First Amendment rights, was the status of special investigator clearly established at the time she fired them?
The Seventh Circuit had decided Matlock v. Burns in 1991, 9 years prior to Smith and Carlson getting fired. And any reasonable official who reads that case and compares the duties that Mr. Matlock had with the duties that Smith and Carlson had would quickly come to the conclusion, if they are reasonable, that Mr. Matlock had much more duties than Smith or Carlson ever did, and Mr. Matlock retained his First Amendment rights. Smith and Carlson mainly served subpoenas.
But then we have to deal with Hernandez, don't we?
Judge, if Ms. Gorecki is able to say, well, look, you've got this case over here and this case over here, and therefore I'm off the hook because, look, I've got 2 divergent opinions, then she's got unlimited immunity. And so does every other public official. The analysis is you have to find the most closely analogous case and not just say, well, look, somebody called an investigator over here was exempt from First Amendment protection, and this person retained theirs. And so therefore there's no apparent authority. No plaintiff would ever get off the snide if that was true.
Draw close analogy as you see it to Matlock. Would.
Smith and Carlson mainly serve subpoenas. In fact, even in the statute, that is the number 1 duty. Second duty, return of process. Even in the statute, that is the number 2 duty. They may or may not give a report to the assistant state's attorney, and that report may or may not be accepted. But the report is going to be just a factual report. They make no recommendations on how to proceed. They make no objective findings whatsoever. They have no power to settle cases. Their job also included getting physical control of the documents pursuant to a subpoena prepared by others. What were the position of Mr. Matlock? Well, he too investigated cases. But unlike our plaintiffs, he did give objective findings and did make recommendations that the law department could accept or reject. So there we had a case where we had an investigator actually going out and doing objective investigation and giving recommendations.
And this position is exclusively ministerial in this setting?
Judge, for over 20 years it has been ministerial. I guess in the abstract, could Ms. Gorecki ask them to do something that's not ministerial? I suppose so. But she could ask any one of a number of employees to do something.
Well, in the law enforcement context, the bulk of peace officers that would come in contact with a county prosecutor's office would not be under the direct supervision of the state's attorney. I think we could agree with that. They may be county employees or they might be state employees, but they don't. So they usually are bringing to the county prosecutor cases that have occurred and on their watch and on the county prosecutor's watch. Is the special investigator someone who has a role apart from that? In other words, if there's an investigation to be started in response to complaints and the like, as opposed to the reports of violent crime of the night before, is that where the is there a discretionary involvement there where they go about in more of a free ranging situation because crime hasn't yet been detected? In other words, do they go about a role different than the state police or the deputy sheriff or the city police or village police?
Yes, I understand Your Honor's question, and number one, the special investigator themselves has absolutely no discretion to go out and investigate anything. Number two, the record will reflect through the affidavits that the police department of whatever jurisdiction is involved does the primary investigation with whatever manpower or that they have available. Also, there are investigators in working within the state attorney's office who, as counsel alluded to, are not appointed by the state attorney, are not under the auspices of that office, and yet they seem to do a fine job. We've put in the record the affidavit of David Moore, a known Democrat who worked as not only an investigator, but a lead investigator, who by all accounts did a fine job. So the idea that political fidelity is a bona fide criteria for this position just historically does not hold water.
Well, I mean, Gorecki, Carlson, and Smith are all Republicans, right?
I'm sorry?
They're all Republicans.
Mr. Smith,
Mr. Carlson, and Ms. Gorecki, they're all Republicans.
They are. I believe that's what the record tells us. However, Mr. Moore was a Democrat. And Mr. Barsanti, the first assistant, actually ran, and we brought this up in our brief, actually ran against Mr.
Right.
Ackerman, lost. He's a political rival, and he's the first assistant.
Well, there's a lot of things that people could keep someone on because they're really good at their job. Obviously, for whatever reason, she decided not to have this position filled. This would be a lot easier for me, at least, if she had filled them and they did then participate in what she considered more confidential or policymaking issues. So we don't have that. So all we have is the facts we have to accept, I guess, is she fired them because they were criticizing her and political opponents and whatever else you want to call, even though they're in the same party. So I guess we have to take that as the reason, as opposed to the fact that, I don't know, do they have a low pay grade or compared to an assistant state's attorney, for example? Would that be a valid comparison?
I'm sure they did have
is
a lower
record about there being just kind of at the level of, let's say, the she was a stenographer. I wonder if that means anything. Well, as far as level, I don't know why she didn't continue the position, but.
Two things, Your Honor. One, the record is clear, and for the purposes of everything that's happened up to this point, Gorecki has admitted firing Smith and Carlson because of their political speech. Two, there's nothing in the record that says that the terms of these special investigators are coextensive with the state's attorney. It's not in the statute. It's not in the job description. Three, even if it were, the Supreme Court has said that we could analogize this case to those non-tenured professor cases where the Supreme Court has said, look, the lack of a contractual tenure or a right to future employment is simply immaterial to a free speech claim. It might be material to a property due rights claim, but not to a free speech claim. So even if they are on successive one-year contracts, that fact is irrelevant to this analysis. To say that investigators are just like state attorneys, I think that's fairly obviously not the point. There's no prosecutorial decisions made by the investigators, and their input into those prosecutorial decisions is factual, and that's the state of the record right now. If there are any other questions from the panel, I'd be happy to address.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Rosano, your time expired, but we had extensive questioning. You may have 2 minutes.
Your Honor, first let me address a couple of things. The record does, I asked Mr. Barsanti in his deposition, you know, what functions did these particular individuals perform? And he said they rarely serve subpoenas. And then I confronted him with an investigator's log, which detailed the functions or the activities of these investigators while they were employed under the prior administration. And if you look at that log, and I asked him questions about it, it's in the record. If you look at that log, they routinely investigated criminal conduct, they routinely investigated official misconduct, all at the behest and direction of the state's attorney. So this notion that these two individuals only serve subpoenas is completely unsupported by the record. Secondly, I want to address the Matlock case because that's the plaintiff's primary case that they rely upon that the law was clearly established. In Matlock involved a position that was a stenographer, but that person happened to also perform investigative duties for the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. What this court did in that case was look at those duties, look at the law on investigator-type positions in state attorneys' offices, looked at Matlock specifically, looked at the Hudson case, looked at the Livis case, looked at the Upton case, and said, you know what? The law is uncertain. It's uncertain. We can't tell whether a state attorney can fire that particular person or not for political reasons, and therefore granted qualified immunity to the Cook County State's Attorney's Office. Or the state attorney, rather. Secondly, I want to emphasize that a person doesn't have to make policy to be exempt from political firings. The law is that if that person has meaningful input, either directly or indirectly, into prosecutorial decisions, then that person can be fired for political reasons. And that's what this position is, functionally and inherently. Has those attributes.
But doesn't, Mr. Rosano, this position have the potential to impact policy depending on the employment by the respective state's attorney?
Yes.
But carries with it facially a kind of ministerial or cabined role in the sense that the title is investigator, which would not necessarily speak to policy. I mean, obviously there's discretion in any peace officer, as we know, whether it's a traffic stop or investigation of a murder. But is it because there's a potential to be a policymaker and in the inner circle, especially in a relatively small office, that sets this apart? Is that your argument?
I think it's really both. I mean, surely there is the potential because the state attorney who appoints personally someone to fill that position can ask that person to do a number of things in terms of their investigative duties and report back to the state attorney personally.
So are you basically saying that there are administrative aides who happen to be empowered with police power?
No, I wouldn't describe them as administrative aides.
Well,
I think that what they are is they're police officers is what they are. They're the state's attorney.
If you want to build a foundation up from, I guess for me at least, if you build a foundation up that they're peace officers, who may have a discretionary capacity depending on assignment, versus what I call them aides to the state's attorney who are empowered with police power, it creates a little different paradigm for me, if you can follow where I'm coming from.
Okay.
And maybe it's just a historical matter and whether the record reflects which model is used. I mean, if the, you know, the legislature can empower anyone to be a peace officer. It can empower former peace officers, as the current legislature in this state is considering, to carry firearms. I guess it's the issue of the label versus what historical background the record will produce about the position that I think tends to tilt these cases in the direction.
Okay. Well, then, Judge, let me give you the one historical use of the position. I know my time is up, but if I can address it. There's at least one instance in the record, and one I think is glaring, where the special investigator, Mr. Carlson, was asked to investigate official misconduct involving the county coroner. And he went ahead and did a full investigation, interviewed witnesses, assessed the credibility of witnesses, came back with evidence and a report to the state's attorney with a recommendation as to whether charges should be filed against that individual. And Mr. Barsanti, in his deposition, it's in the record, said, I relied upon that recommendation. I chose not to charge. That's meaningful input into a prosecutorial decision. So that position has been used in the respect that I think that you're alluding to. So just because they also may have served subpoenas or done some more ministerial things does not preclude a subsequent state's attorney, as it didn't preclude the prior state's attorney from utilizing that individual in a greater capacity to help them with policy-making decisions, to help them with prosecutorial decisions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks to both counsels. The case is taken under advisement.